Lead us in a prayer, and then let's go to work. Father, we do thank you for what is happening here in these hours together. And though I'm just dropping in for this time and the time yesterday, I sense an excitement about what is being communicated and the interaction among those who are here. And this hour and a half that we've set aside here, we pray that you will undertake in our behalf, that you'll give us alertness, that you will give us wisdom in the questions we ask and the comments that we make, and that we might participate together here in a way that would stimulate each of us, bring glory to yourself, and further your cause. So we pray this in Christ's name and commit this time to you for his glory. Amen. Somebody could close the back door back there, please, and we'll get into this. The Light Church, 24% fewer commitments, home of the 75% tithe, 15-minute sermons, 45-minute worship services. We have only 8 commandments, your choice. We use just 3 spiritual laws, have an 800-year millennium, everything you always wanted in a church and less. You've got all these cartoons in the back of your notes. If probably good enough to make overheads if you want. Here's a setup where the church pew is very soft, all kinds of cushions, a television set, a coffee dispenser. Now that's what I call church, he says. But there are people who aren't really after the soft life. There are people that we're seeing, not just in our church, but in numbers of churches, who really want to make an impact, who do want to reach the unreached, who do want to disciple. And one of the pieces to that puzzle, we feel, is this area of spiritual planning. My name is Ron Ortley. I'm on staff at Bear Valley Church. Frank Tillipaw is the senior pastor. He's going to take a run at you tomorrow, I believe, and Friday. Just to give you a little history of how the spiritual planning came about. 3 years ago, Frank was talking to a man on the staff with Voice of Calvary in Jackson, Mississippi, by the name of Tim Robertson, and they were talking about Tim coming on staff at Bear Valley. And Tim was also, in conjunction with that ministry and a couple other things doing, he was also doing some financial planning with people. And so they got into the whole analogy of financial planning, where you look at the resources of the person or the couple, interact with them on what those resources are, and then help them use those resources in a financial way. And they talked about the parallel of the spiritual resources that people have. Why don't we go in and work with a couple or an individual, look at what resources they have to bring to bear on the ministry, and do spiritual planning. And so that's how the terminology came about. Through that discussion, Tim Robertson did come on staff, and so for 2.5 years he was developing this area of spiritual planning. Betty and I have been members of Bear Valley Church for 17.5 years, and I was finishing up revision on the 2-7 series with a couple other guys, and I really needed a change of pace, and have been working with local churches the last 18 years in the area of discipleship, and we pretty much knew the Bear Valley system inside and out, and what they were doing and how it was done, and we saw the whole Church Unleashed thing happen. And so anyway, it's worked out that I'm on loan to Bear Valley from the Navigators after 30 years on staff with Navigators. I started when I was 5 years old with the Navigators, and am now on loan to Bear Valley. So that's where I'm coming from. And so during that period of time that Tim was in charge of spiritual planning, I was asked to be on the think tank. I'm kind of an innovation kind of person, and I like to get into new areas and new idea things. And so I was on the think tank. And so it was really a natural when Tim was needed in another responsibility to be the executive pastor for Bear Valley, that I could just slip right in, take over the spiritual planning, and also take care of the discipleship for Bear Valley. Bear Valley is on 4 campuses. It's 4 church locations. It's not just one building. And so the main building is on Sheridan, and so it's Bear Valley Church Sheridan campus, and then up north, Bear Valley Church Pecos campus, and a little bit west, Bear Valley Church Jewel campus, and then Bear Valley Church South campus. So that is that's a little bit of the background and how it came about and what where I fit in. And so we're in process of figuring out this whole spiritual planning thing, but we are 3 years into it. The only other church that we know of has spent as much time in this area as Willow Creek Church outside of Chicago. And Bruce Bugbee, the man who's put together what they call networking, what we call spiritual planning, we spent a half a day together maybe a month ago. And so I think I'm up to speed on where they are. So we just want to share with you where we are in the process. And your notes, we've already talked about the analogy of the financial planner. Another way to look at what we do with people is the idea of human resources manager. My wife went back to school, and she just picked up a degree in management of human resources. So we've been talking the last year, as she was finishing up that degree, we were talking about management of human resources. And the parallel is just unbelievable when you start talking about matching people to ministry and matching people to ministry situations. Those of you just coming in, we've run out of notes. Take careful notes, and we'll get you a set of notes at the office later today. The third area is that of a guidance, career guidance counselor, because really what we're doing is directing the spiritual ministry career of this lay person or this couple in our church to head them down the road in a direction where they can be most effective. The night before last, I went by to drop off a book at Bob and Bonnie's house. Bob and Bonnie are in the process of going through spiritual planning with us. We spend 4 1-hour and 15-minute sessions with an individual or with a couple. And so Bob and Bonnie, it became very clear that where they could really fit into what we're doing is to be small group leaders. And so the night before last, when I went by, he was just very excited about what's going on in his, really their small group, discipleship group that met last Tuesday for the first time. And he said, you know, Robin, I don't think she's a Christian. I said, is that right? But boy, is she close. Bonnie and I talked to her. We had this great talk, and she is very, very close. And you just sense this excitement, not only for that discipling group, but for the outreach. And a lot of that is because we were able to put a square peg in a square hole. And Bob and Bonnie are doing what their whole makeup is geared to do, not just spiritual gifts, but their personality, their background, things that they've done in the past in ministry. And so just to see that kind of excitement is thrilling. So those are the analogies that we're talking about. That give us an idea of what we're talking about with spiritual planning. I think that the terminology, we may need to change that in the not-too-distant future, because people keep saying, now, spiritual planning, that must have to do with spiritual growth. And they can't quite come up with what spiritual planning means just by the title. What I would like to do in this session is I would like to keep it in high gear and get through the material we've got here. And then en route, if you do have questions or comments, jump right in. But I'm just going to press. And I've tried to unload a lot of stuff. I taught this yesterday. I felt that it went well and that we've got about the right amount of material here. But I want you to get the feel of where we are in this process. We don't have it all figured out. And where we are is based a lot on the history of Bear Valley. But I think there will be application for you as well in some of the things that we cover in this time. What are some of the benefits that we've seen in going through this process with people as far as our local church is concerned? One of the things is that people feel that you care. Not long ago, we sent out a questionnaire to 100 of the people who've gone through this process. There have been over 200 people go through this process with us now in the 3-year period. And one of the things that kept coming out in the questionnaires is we cannot believe that you cared enough about us to spend that personal time with us and help us analyze who we are and what we can do and to personalize that for us. And we are very grateful. And so that is how they perceived it. And so they felt that the church really cared. Wow, you must really care to do this with us. And so that goes a long way. We are seeing more volunteerism, and we suspect that the more we do this, the more volunteerism that we will see. And let's see. Well, we do need volunteers, it says, and so sometimes we do have to go after them aggressively, and maybe not tackle them like the overhead would suggest. But we are seeing more people involved in ministry because we've been able to talk with them and come up with a place where they could fit. The uncertainty of what these lay people will do, I think, is one of the things that hinders their wanting to get into a ministry and to volunteer for a ministry. Just the unknown. And so if we can make it more tangible to them, to where they see what those options are and what it will mean for them in ministry, we're finding a willingness then for those people to pitch in and to be involved and to to do something tangible. Another area that we're seeing is that we are clarifying the ministry jobs, because we have to do that in order to be able to tell them what the catalog of ministry jobs are. Now, Willow Creek and their networking, they've got everything on computer. We're moving that direction. We've been doing spiritual planning as long as they have, but they've been able to put the firepower into finishing up their materials on it. Bruce was saying, well, yeah, I was keeping two secretaries busy full time. And I thought, boy, I could use two secretaries full time for us to... So our process is going to take, you know, just a little bit longer. But in their situation, they were having a big retreat, and so they needed 7 nurses. So they just got on the computer. There were over 100 nurses that were on their list. And so all they had to do was make phone calls, and before you knew it, they had the people, you know, who are ready to go as nurses for that retreat. But the other side of that coin is, what are the jobs? So what we are seeing is that as we go through the process, we need to be able to tell these people where the jobs are. And I'll mention that a little more on that later. And then just the matching of people to the jobs. It's exciting when you've got a lot of ministry things going, and the more ministry things going, the more exciting it gets, but the more confusing it gets to the lay people. And the more confusing it is for those lay people as to where they can fit in this exciting thing that's just going every which way. So a big part of the process is matching them to jobs where we, as the pastoral staff of the church, really want people in there, and we're not sure where to get them. And then the fifth item is there's an increasing need if these ministries are lay kinds of ministries, if they are multiple ministries, all different kinds of choices, and if it's decentralized to where the lay people are running ministries. How many of you have read Unleashing the Church by Tillipon, just to get a feel? Okay. At Bear Valley, where it becomes such a critical issue to us, is so much of this is decentralized. We have got to get our hands on people and push them out there, and to track down the people for those ministries is not always easy. So it is critical for us as to whether or not we can get the job done in our structure. This guy comes in, excuse me, I'd like to volunteer for committee work involving sensitivity and sacrifice in challenging a secularized, value-impoverished society with the radical claims of the gospel. I have Thursday afternoons free. And, you know, the first overheads that we used related to the light church and the soft life, there are people coming into Denver in the big metro areas that are looking for ministry. We had a couple come in from Kansas, Kurt and Heidi are their first names, and I mean, they wanted to be in ministry. They're in their early 30s, they have 3 young children. He is a sharp engineer type, she is just as sharp and relational as can be. And so one of our ministries, Life Unlimited to Unwed Mothers, she and another girl took over that ministry. I mean, she wasn't with us a month. And she was into jointly running Life Unlimited with Linda. So here are Heidi and Linda. And I think that at least in the metro areas, there are people coming in looking for a place to work. There's a Hebrew Christian brother who came in to Denver. And through someone else I knew, I met the guy. And he says, I really want somebody to pray with. And I said, well, you know, I've got a little time and I could use a little extra praying time. Let's get together a few times. So we've been getting together Tuesdays, meeting at a park, and we just walk the park around the perimeter of that big old park and just pray together. And as I talk to him, he's been to three or four churches in the Denver area. He's got a good grasp on Scripture. He's done evangelism, and he's looking for a place to plug in. And the church he's been attending, they can't find any use for him. He's an annoyance to them. He's questioning some of the things they're doing, and they don't like that. And I'm talking about both key lay people and the two pastoral staff. Well, he and I were walking. Yesterday was Tuesday. He and I were walking, you know, 5 o'clock. We're walking around that place praying for things. I'm heading for California this afternoon, doing some things with YWAM and for 4 days, and then I'm coming back. And his wife is expecting a baby in December. And, you know, we had lots to pray about. But anyway, last night he said, what have you got at Bear Valley that I could do? I mean, just straight out, what could I do? I said, we've got lots of possibilities. We'll talk about that. But what does he need? He needs spiritual planning. We need to analyze who he is, where he's coming from, and we've got this seasoned worker that the other church could have had. They could have had him. And he could have taught their most advanced adult Sunday school class if they had wanted. He could have done all kinds of things. But he was perceived as a threat. He was not perceived as an opportunity and a resource. I think oftentimes we do more thinking about what we do with pastoral staff than we do with the lay people. And maybe that's just our history. But here's one that parallels the football trading. He was traded to Valley Church for a music director and a youth pastor, you know. And we do this kind of thing in the church. Don't laugh at me. I mean, we're out there looking for somebody who can fill a certain job slot, and we're willing to let somebody go or move them horizontally or do something else. And we're in this business. Don't kid yourself. We've got the evangelical draft, and you know, and it's going on all over the country. And I get a steady stream across my desk for people who are looking, either looking for somebody or looking for a job in the area of discipleship or the area of evangelism or the area of, you know, some sort of an associate pastor responsibility. But we've just gotten to the place where we've got to do, and probably you have to do, the same thing with the lay people, to where we're doing that same kind of planning on their development and getting the right people in the right job slots. What are some of the benefits then? We've talked about benefits to the local church if we are doing this, some of the needs that spiritual planning can fulfill. As far as the individual, coming to self-understanding is a big thing that we are seeing, which is very helpful in the process of their spiritual development and in finding a niche for them. In the spring, we put on 3 seminars on spiritual planning for pastoral staff all around the Denver area, who just to let them know what we're learning. And we don't want to sit on this thing. We don't want to hoard this thing. If we're out here on the cutting edge doing this experimental stuff, we feel that the other people ought to understand what we're doing and bring them up to speed. And so we did one on a Saturday morning in April. We did one on a Saturday morning in May. We did one in June. The same content, but upgraded each time. Had a pastor fly in from Annapolis, Maryland, with one of his key laymen, an associate pastor from Denton, Texas, and a key layman. They flew in. They want to know what we're doing here. And so one of the guys in the Denver area is an associate pastor. And so afterwards he said, would you be willing to go all through that process with me, just like if I were in your church? I said, sure, I'll do it. And so what was very interesting is, and I want to mention it later when we come to another section in the outline, but the self-understanding that took place in this young man who's in his late 20s, it was phenomenal. And it is setting a whole direction for him as an associate pastor as to where down the road he might fit in the body of Christ and where he might minister. But with lay people, it is no less surprising, just coming to understanding as to where we fit. A fellow named Chuck, I was going through the process with him. He's an engineer. He's got a wonderful educational background. And it comes out that he loves to be alone and study. He's not that nuts about being in groups. And so one of the ministries that we've got going in the inner city is Denver Street School. And so here's where the kids need to finish a high school education. They've come off of the streets. They've come to Christ, some of them. Some of them get in there, haven't come to Christ, and later come to Christ. And so as Chuck and I talked through the options of the ministries at Bear Valley, the number one choice for him was to become a school teacher with all of that math and all that science background, so he can go either Monday or Wednesday. We've worked that out, and he's in the process this week of lining up when he will go to Denver Street School and teach. But it just affirmed him in that he is not an outgoing, public speaking, group leading kind of person. He's more studious, more introverted, more quiet, but very thoughtful, very reflective, and sensitive to the people around him. And so we just affirmed him in that self-understanding. We're seeing growth and development. I want a thing that seemed to be misunderstood that I had to clarify yesterday toward the end of the session. I would like to just grab it right here. Bear Valley is very much a missions, ministry, outreach-oriented church, and is not as oriented on going deep with people. It's get them out the door. Get them out there moving. Get them out where they're in ministry. And a lot of that has to do with Tillipaw's background, in that he came to Christ through a navigator ministry in Germany when he was an enlisted man. And immediately they had him out with an evangelism team. And if you've heard him talk, or if you've heard the tapes, or if you've seen the videos, or if you remember that part of the book, he went out in the evangelism. They knocked on the first door, and nobody was there. And boy, that's good. Knocked on the next door, nobody there. The next door, they said, well, the guy is down the hall, and they got a card game going down there. And he knew, he hadn't been a Christian very long. He knew exactly what it was going to be like in that room. And they went in, pulled the guy out, said, we're coming from the chapel and the chaplain's office, and we want to invite you to come to chapel and want to talk to you about your personal faith. And a few minutes later, 30 minutes later, whatever it was, he watched this guy commit his life to Christ. And so I think that influences the way Bear Valley's thinking. And so people are getting out there into ministry fast. But in the spiritual planning process, it doesn't mean that there is no spiritual growth or discipleship going on there. It's just that the thrust is outward. And so during the spiritual planning process, we will just say to the people, well, what I suggest you get into this small group, or you get into this discipleship group, or that you get in this Sunday school class over the next winter because of the caliber of the teaching that's going on there. And so we do make these recommendations. I think of Bill and Diana as one couple that comes to mind. Young couple, have just one child. Bill comes out of a rock music background. And I don't know whether you say he has a haircut or a hairdo. I'm not sure which it is. And the clothes that he wears are you know, a little off to one side of the spectrum. And so the heart of that spiritual planning thing was, hey, we really feel that over this next year you ought to focus on spiritual growth. And so that was nearly a year ago now. And I saw him Sunday. He came by and he reached out for my hand and he shook it. And he says, got this little Bible study going with those non-Christians. Just like we talked about, go after musicians. Go after musicians. You know, we talked about go after musicians, you remember? I remember, go after musicians. And so we didn't want to pull him out of all those contacts. We want to keep him over there in them. You know, don't change your haircut. Don't change your clothes. Stay over there and keep doing that. But there was a period of growth there for several months. where he wasn't into that, and now he comes back and tells me, hey, we are into that. And then we've alluded to this from the other side of the coin, but people do feel like they belong if we're giving them this kind of attention. Ministry effectiveness, we're seeing more and more effectiveness when we match these people up to the right kind of job, and so they're doing what they're good at. I think of a couple of case histories where we were talking with them. We said, what you ought to get into is the seniors ministry. There are over 400 seniors involved in ministry. The guy in charge of the seniors ministry, his office is right next door to mine, Bob Sachs. And he comes next door and we talk once in a while and I go see him. Bob is such a relational guy. He's really the warm, fuzzy kind of guy. And so he just doesn't like to be alone very long. So once in a while, he'll come over, you know, just come in, sit down, talk to me a little bit. He's that kind of guy. He wants to be with people. And so anyway, a few weeks ago he said, so-and-so, I think her name was Gladys. I should have checked with him. But he said, Gladys is in her early 80s, and he said she came to Assurance of Salvation a year ago. And he said, she's been working on this guy down the hall who's 75. And he just came to Christ last night. Now, is that a legitimate ministry? I think that is. Yeah. And, they take these seniors up into the mountains to see the aspens turning here in Colorado, so a couple weeks ago. So they're heading out in the van, and this one gal, they close the door, and she gets her finger caught in the door, and it hits that nail, and she's not quite a Christian yet. And so anyway, Bob's telling me about how they headed down to the hospital and the emergency room. And then here are three or four or five people, other seniors, and who are just holding her hand and talking to her, and it's going to be all right, and could I get you a drink of water? And all, I mean, just smothering this dear gal with love. And Bob says, she is that close to coming to Christ. And he just, a little gap in his fingers there. By talking this over, we've been able to channel people into that ministry who have the gift of mercy. And they don't hit the hard-nosed evangelism pattern. And they don't hit the discipleship pattern. And they don't hit teach the adult Sunday school pattern. But boy, you put them out there with those seniors, and they're dangerous. I mean, they're terrific. So we're seeing greater ministry effectiveness by putting these people into places where they really are equipped and God's glued them together in a way they can do that ministry. We're also seeing less stress in the lives of the people when they're doing what they're good at and what they're comfortable at. All of us sitting in this room, we have been asked to do things in ministry that didn't fit us. And boy, it was high stress, wasn't it? I'm sure every person here could give an illustration of something you were asked to do, and it was square peg and round hole, and you agonized over that thing, and you were so glad when it was over. My wife and I had a couple in one of our discipleship groups that we were leading, and there was this one couple, Ray and Wanda, in there, and Ray and Wanda, they weren't getting their lessons done. This was years ago, and still it haunts me, this the little scenario. And so they finally dropped out of the group, and I thought, yeah, no commitment. And then Wanda is teaching our three-year-old daughter in Sunday school. Wanda was a genius with three-year-olds. I mean genius. And she would just get right down to their level and look them right in the eye and talk to them and touch them and, talk their language. And my whole perspective on what discipleship is was radically adjusted at that point in time. And so we want people that are in the right kind of job. I have to say something about the other side of that coin, however. And that is, there are just times, especially in a small church, when you've got to do what needs to be done. And certain lay people have to do what needs to be done. And we don't check you out whether you've got these two gifts and this background. We don't check your resume, right? It's just, we need somebody who can take this class or do this thing and plug the people in. I think that on the other end of the spectrum, where we've got churches that have got everything going on, we've got to do something. This one, you know, baptisms, all modes, confirmations, dedications, evangelism explosions, marriage counseling, premarital counseling, divorce counseling, singles ministry, camping, retreats, premillennial fellowship, amillennial fellowship, you know, and on through the list, you know. A lot of choices. But on the other end of the scale, where there are all these choices, we've really got to do something with the people in order to find a place where they fit into that big state of confusion that's going on there every Sunday and during the week as well. So that becomes important with whatever the size of the church. We really feel at Bear Valley that this whole issue of spiritual planning may be one of those things that's going to impact every church in America over the next 5 to 10 years. That we've just got to do a better job of managing the people God gives us. And we're in the process. We've done the fundraising. We're going to build a new building. You've read the book. You wonder how that fits into the... You can ask Frank how that fits in. But seriously, where it fits in is that if you've got more seats there, well, I mean, I think we seat only 295 in the Sheridan Campus Sanctuary, only 295. And Frank, periodically through the years, has had to say at 11:15, okay, a bunch of you need to pray about going to the 8:30 service or going over to the Jewel campus and going over there. But we've got to clear out this 11 or 11:15, depends which year it was, service in order to get empty pews, because once you get empty pews, they'll fill up. And that was true. And you go in there the next Sunday, and it was half full. They'd been packed. Half full. And it wasn't many weeks. It was all full again. And so we just know, and the new building will only be 750 seats. It isn't 2,000 or 3,000. And we merged with another church, and it was ready to die. And the senior pastor, now he's the pastor of our South Campus. And all of this has worked out beautifully. And there's 3.7 acres there. That in Denver, if we had to go buy it someplace, it'd be $1.5 to $2 million. We've got the land, so we're not doing something stupid that doesn't fit, you know, or, you know, what Frank's been preaching. It fits, but we know that we've got to get more seats to fill it up, because we need more people and more money to do what God's calling us to do. So anyway, that. That's the bigger church and the problems that they have. One of the areas that we get into with the couple or the individual in this process of spiritual planning is the determination of spiritual gifts. The networking thing that Willow Creek is doing, they spend a lot of time on this. Some of the things that have been out there in the last few years, of course, is Spiritual Gifts Discovery, Wagner, and that seminar, the tapes. Also, Robert Logan has been one of those things that's been out there. Those who are pastors, spiritual gifts implementation, and the use of some questionnaires and so forth. Where we are in our thinking at Bear Valley, and it's based on our history, but we think it's accurate, is that the spiritual gifting is only one of the factors. Some of the things that are being done in other churches, they're placing people into jobs entirely on what the spiritual gifting is. We feel that there are other issues besides spiritual gifts that have to be brought to bear on determining where this person fits. The use of inventories on spiritual gifts, we are not sold on that. The Logan pattern has been to do that. I don't know. I'm not going to hold him to what his thinking is today. But that's what it is in the implementation material. There are four inventories that are available through Fuller. And on the last page there, you've got the phone number if you didn't happen to have that, 1-800-C-FULLER. But probably the most common that you find in evangelical circles is the Houts inventory. And then Wagner has modified Houts, and so you got the modified Houts, which have the sign gifts in it, where Houts does not have the sign gifts in it. and there's a little adjustment in some of the other things. I felt that between these two, when I went through them, I felt that the one with sign gifts, though I don't lean toward the sign gifts in my own beliefs, I felt that that was more accurate in its analysis of me than was this. Then the other two that are available through Fuller is the Trenton Spiritual Gifts Analysis, which has to do with the more formal liturgical kind of church settings. And so that's another one. Then the Wesley Spiritual Gifts Questionnaire for people from that type of background. We are in the process of putting together some material, and we're experimenting with it now. And we're not going to use inventories. It's going to be an analysis of the gifts, some things that they're going to play some games with the definitions of gifts and that. And I'm sorry, we don't have it ready to share with you. We're in the process, but the little bit of field testing we've done on this, it's looking really good. And we think it's going to do a better job for us than inventories. So that's where we are in that. We feel very strongly that spiritual gifts are figured out in the context of the battle, in the context of ministry. And so as we meet with the people in the process of spiritual planning, what we're trying to do is to narrow it down and say, perhaps your gifting is in one of the, maybe you have a combination of things here, but these three or four or five gifts, that's about where you are. But we're not trying to, you know, just line it up with a pigeonhole and shoom, you know, it goes right in that pigeonhole. It's getting them in the ballpark. And then we feel that out in ministry, they're going to confirm whether or not that is their gifting. But there's no way we're going to sit in a classroom and be certain of what people's gifts are or go through any kind of hoops, any kind of evaluative material. We feel another key issue is what do other people believe that one's gift might be or gifts. Bobby Clinton's book, Spiritual Gifts, there's a section in there that's quite good where you go to other people and have an evaluation, people who really know you. And so we're encouraging lay people to talk to others, to their spouse for sure if they're married, and talk this through with them and go through some of the definitions of some of these gifts and come to some understanding of how they would perceive it. For years in ministry, what Betty and I have used in this area of gifts, and it's really only in recent years that the studying and talking of gifts outside of Pentecostal and charismatic churches, you just didn't hear much talk about gifts. Now, gifts, everybody's talking gifts. But one of the things that's been very helpful to us is to, as we're working with an individual or a couple, is to spend a half hour and say, tell us the things you've done well. Just think back of what you felt you did well in ministry. And write them all down. And pretty soon you start seeing some patterns. Then we go back through, now what have you enjoyed doing the most in ministry? What was fun for you? And so we just felt that if we got it down to what they'd done well and what they enjoyed, we're getting pretty close to where the gifting is. And so at Bear Valley, we're, in addition to some of the other things related to gifts, we're asking them to do an analysis in those areas. The next part of your outline here on the issue of determining an individual's resource mix. One of those ingredients would be the gift mix. And I was very interested to talk to Bruce Bugbee a few weeks ago for so many hours, because he knows gifts inside and out. He's read and studied everything that's out there, and they have put together this thing on gifts. Before I told him what our experience has been, I said, are you finding that people have one spiritual gift, or are you finding that they have more? He said, almost without exception, I suspect they have two or three spiritual gifts. And he said, we are also talking gift mix. And I said, that's exactly what we are finding. And that's exactly the terminology we are using, is gift mix. It's some combination. And, you know, the 1 Peter 4 passage, you know, you've at least got one gift. We know that. But our experience is, and what we suspect, and only time will tell, is that most people have multiple gifting of some sort in combination. We also want to get into some of the talents that they have that may not really be identifiable as gift, but certain abilities. And that could be in the areas of crafts, that could be in the ability of their ability to relate to people, that could be musical, that could be, you know, you name it. And then the third area, that of education and experience. And so we talk through what their educational background is, what their experience has been, not just spiritually, but in other areas too. We'd like to know where they are coming from. A few months ago, a fellow called me up from one of our congregations. He said, I want to go through spiritual planning. And so I said, okay. And we set a restaurant that we were going to meet when he got off work. And so I find out that this guy is a high-level executive in one of the big corporations in the Denver area. And he's a West Point graduate. He graduated out of 663 cadets. He graduated number six. Boy, what a guy. I mean, dynamite capacity. Unbelievable capacity. And as we got into talents, education, experience, what I discovered is that he is an expert on survival. He is an expert on mountaineering, on skiing, on cross country, on backpacking, on all of this stuff. And it was interesting, just while I was going through the process with this guy, I was at a social gathering where there are a bunch of people from our church. And I got to talking with a couple, and this guy's name just happened to come up. And I wasn't trying to get into anything about it. It just came up. And they said, oh, and called him by name and said, we went cross-country skiing with him last year. What a fantastic experience. He had this big backpack that stuck way up above his head. And I mean, somebody cut their finger. He had something to put on it and a Band-Aid. And somebody ran out of dry socks and he had extra dry socks. And I mean, he was an unbelievable person. He made us feel comfortable in what we were doing so we knew how to do it. And how, you know, the layers of clothing and all this thing. And he said he's a genius on that. And so as we went through this spiritual planning process, though that door has not opened for ministry, he would really like to do an outward bound kind of ministry thing to where he can use all of this background in survival and jungle warfare and whatever else he's been involved in that equip him to do this kind of ministry, you know. Yeah. Another key issue here that slips by most people, you know, when we get just locked in to find out what their spiritual gifts are and then put them into ministry, is what is their burden? Where does their heart beat? What do they want to do? Gene and Colleen went through spiritual planning. And so they had some options as they got through at the end. But it was several months later, I would just guess 3 or 4 months ago, that they decided they had a tremendous burden for the homeless, for the inner city kind of people, people coming off of drugs, people coming out of horrible backgrounds and in the inner city. And so anyway, we talked with them, and there were other staff who had openings. And so just 2 weeks ago, they moved into Providence House, which is in the inner city. And it's an apartment house where people who are in the process of coming out of that tough, horrible background. This provides them with low-cost place to live that is clean and nice. And it's like in college where you had an RA or an SA, a resident assistant or a student assistant on a floor who's responsible for that floor and sort of keeps things in order. So it's the same sort of setup at Providence House. And so now Gene and Colleen are in Providence House. They've moved in and they perform this RA kind of function. And it's a tremendous ministry. And he's finishing up seminary at Denver Seminary. But the burden thing, you've really got to take a look at. And we feel that's a key in the process. And that's where there's going to be the motivation if they get into a ministry that they're gifted in those areas and all of that. But also they've just got a real desire to see something happen there. We want to know what their learned skills are. things that they can do. And so, you know, that can be, can they lead small groups? Have they been trained in that? Have they learned that skill? Are they a song leader? Do they play the guitar? Can they write curriculum? Do they know about computers? You know, whatever it is. And then personality, I'll just take this off here now and just talk a little bit about personality. Willow Creek is using, in hitting the personality thing, the Tim LaHaye four temperament thing. And I believe there are a couple of master's degree psychologists who put together a questionnaire that helps you determine. I have not seen this, I just know they use it. And I don't know the terminology, you know, it's title in that. In the Navigator system for years, we've used Performax, the DISC. And particularly in the office jobs at the headquarters building, and it's spilled out into ministry. At Bear Valley, we're using the Myers-Briggs Type Indicator. 2 million people will take that in corporate business this year. And there are many ancillary products that go along with it. And so we feel that it's the best tool that we can get our hands on. And let me just go back to that associate pastor I mentioned a few minutes ago who said, would you go through the process with me? When Steve and I got down to the session where we evaluate how he came out on the Myers-Briggs Type Indicator, I give him several inputs, and I've gone through the basic training, the advanced training. We're insisting anybody who uses this has a high level of professionalism. They really know what they're talking about. They've got the background to use Myers-Briggs. They're certified kinds of people. We have a counseling department at Bear Valley, and I still have to pick up a testing and measurements course. As soon as I have the $400, I'll go take that course. And but under the umbrella of the counseling department, I am authorized. They feel I'm skillful enough, and having gone through the training and the reading and all that, I can use it. So with Steve, when we got to this is one of the ancillary products that goes along with it, and that's introduction to type and organizational settings. That kind of person likes this kind of a work environment. Contains hard-working people focused on facts and results. Likes an environment that provides security. Likes an environment that rewards a steady pace. Likes a structured environment. Likes a task-oriented environment. Likes an orderly environment, and so forth. Well, when we got into his... Introduction to Type in Organizational Settings. But as we analyzed his type, how he came out, and pigeonholed the work setting that he likes, is he loves to have an organized environment. He loves to start things, but he hates to finish them. I said, how many loose ends you got over there at the church? They're all over the place. And as we talked through some of this stuff, some of the issues came into focus that he'll really be great in small groups, his personality makeup, he does not want to lead anything big. He wants to lead things that are small. He wants to do a thorough job in the settings that's small. So I said, okay, on small groups, have you been to Serendipities training? No. What have you read by Roberta Hestinus? Or have you gone out to the small group training that Fuller offers and the one that was down in Orlando last year? And, well, I suggest you get busy and set aside money and you go to work and you could just see what we figured out from type impacted his life 5 times harder than confirming spiritual gifting. And in Christian circles, I think the pendulum in some groups has swung to where anything that has to do with psychology is humanism. Man, if we didn't have a psychology-trained people doing counseling at Bear Valley, we'd be in trouble. Boy, we're really meeting some needs there that could not be met in any other way. One thing that sort of puts Christians' hearts at ease as they go through the process is we suggest this book, Esteem Gift from God by Ruth McRoberts Ward. So here's a godly woman in Michigan who's been a counselor for years. She starts each chapter out with a passage of Scripture, and right away you feel at ease and comfortable as an evangelical. but she gets into what, if you're an E or an I or an S or an N or whatever you are in the Myers-Briggs. So she talks about the results of Myers-Briggs in ways that the Christian says, okay, I trust you. You really know the Lord. And it gets them into accepting our evaluation of personality type, and they're coming to a clear understanding of who they are and how they will best operate. Just if you have no background in Myers-Briggs, I'll give you one simple example. You come out either an E for extrovert or an I for introvert. And you may be a very talkative introvert. It doesn't have to do with how much you talk. In the United States, 75% of the people are extrovert, are E, come out E. In Japan, it's the other way around. 25% extrovert, 75% introvert. But what it does say is introvert, you like to get alone to recuperate. And an E likes to get with people to recuperate. And so just to give the person permission to get alone to recuperate. I've seen a half a dozen of those in the last few months. Just giving them permission to get alone, to recuperate, that you're not copping out on society and you're not running away from people. You just need to get alone. Before our daughter's 18 years old, he's a freshman in college. But this last year, she went through the Myers-Briggs in a setting where it was all youth. And she came out an I. And sure enough, all last year, she'd come home from school, go up in her room and close the door. And she would recharge her batteries. And pretty soon, she'd come out, she's ready to go again. So there's just one area. And you know, we could spend a couple hours just on Myers-Briggs here. But we feel that that is really helping us help people find a place to minister that fits who they are and to give us a good fit. Okay, let's just finish up here and then we'll interact on whatever you'd like to talk about. Let me just run through what's in the four sessions in broad terms so you get a little feel of that. That's not in your notes. I wanted to limit the notes to two pages, and there are some things that I'll say that aren't in the notes, but this is so simple, just jot it down someplace. But session one, they come having answered questions on a questionnaire, 10 questions that we ask, and it gets into what their background is, what their spiritual pilgrimage has been, do they have a ministry burden, but we've got a list of things. And so when they come to session one, we talk through all of these things that were on the questionnaire. Then at the end of session one, we give them the questionnaire and the answer sheet for the Myers-Briggs type indicator. They take that home with them. We give them an envelope with stamps on it, addressed to the church. And so they go through and answer the questions, put it in the envelope, and send it to us. Then in the second session, We spend all of the second session going through evaluating the Myers-Briggs results, what that means to them as an individual, how it might impact their marriage, how it might impact their ministry. That is a very fun time for them. The third session, we talk about spiritual gifts. And so between sessions two and three, we have a two-week break there to where they have time to really think through on what their spiritual gifts might be. And we don't rush that. The other thing that we do in session three is we give them a list of all the ministries that we've got. And so as the thing I'm holding up here now is what we hand them. It's a one-page summary of what the ministry of the care company is, what the Ministry of Christian Peacemakers is, what the City Lights Coffee House Ministry is, what the Denver Street School is, what the Food Closet is, what Friendship International is, what the Healthcare Ministry is, what and on through. And so they take this with them, and they try to narrow it down out of 21 ministries or whatever it is right now. It's been as high as 29, and we let ministries die, and we let new ones start, and so we're around 21 right now. And so in the third session, we give them this and say, give some thought to this, think about it, and try to narrow it down. Then in the fourth session, we get into an action plan, and that's what you have in your notes here in a little more detail. I felt that those specifics I ought to put on the overhead and just tell you how this goes. The question is, do they read anything in preparation for the third session where we talk about spiritual gifts? We give them an assignment where that's material that we're in the process of developing, but we have them take that home and go through some of the definitions and look at some of the passages of Scripture, and so they have dealt with these issues alone, and then they come and then we help them do some further sorting in session 3. Thank you. In session 4, we want them to come with this action plan in hand. And what it is a 12, it's setting goals for 12 months in the areas of their own growth and in ministry. And so the sub-points that we have here are, we want them to come up with some goals related to worship, and that is both corporate and individual. And so I think of one of the fellows recently, one of his goals was to attend a certain church service consistently. And he was doing that, but he just wanted to affirm that that's when he would go. And secondly, that he would have 5 out of 7 quiet times a week. And so that was his goal, that he would meet with the Lord and read the Scriptures, do a little praying 5 out of 7 days a week. And I felt it was realistic. You know, I never wanted to write 7 out of 7. That is poor management. And, you know, if he gets 7 out of 7, that's fine, but I'd rather have him have the goal of 5 out of 7. Then on instruction, basically we're talking about being in a Sunday school class. And I think of one of the fellows lately, that being in a certain Bible study, he felt that's where he was really receiving instruction, because of the doctrinal orientation of the Bible study. And fellowship, you know, do they really have Christian friends? Are they spending time with Christian friends? Are they picking that up through an adult Sunday school class? Are they picking that up in a discipling group? We have them really evaluate whether they do have Christian friends that they're relating with. Then ministry, we want them to narrow it down to where they've got 3 ministries that they could go try by the time we hit session 4. And so they've had a chance in session 3 to look over those things, take those lists of various ministries home with them. And so in session 4, we're narrowing it down tighter. And even in talking about personality and talking about spiritual gifts, we've suggested the types of ministries that they would be most comfortable in. On stewardship, we talk about time and money. And a recent ministry that started up within the last month is a ministry to counsel people concerning their finances. And so we've got a guy who's had all the Larry Burkett training, and he's had other things in his business background that really set him up to do that. And we really think that's going to influence the giving to the church if this can be handled right. Then in the number 6, we've got to keep in mind both singles and couples. And so we say family and we say close friends, or another way we've said it is relationships. If it's a single person and they live with other people, who are your roommates and are you relating well to them? If you're married, how are you doing relating to your wife, to your kids, or to your husband and to your kids and that? But we really want them to evaluate. A lot of times we're finding people who are too busy, and they write down here that the man will have a date with his wife at least twice a month, or that they really are going to start planning their summer vacation now. And things like this, they get into giving some attention to family where there may have been some neglect there. And then item 7 is personal development, and that can be in any area. One guy decided he was going to learn to play the guitar, and that's what he wanted. That was going to be his personal development. We've had people who are going to go to seminars in certain areas of expertise for their own personal development. We've had people who are going to join a health club and tone up and go to work on some of those things. So we've had all kinds of things. But you can see that though we're a very ministry-oriented church, so much of what we end up with is for the further growth and development of the individual. Okay, let me just pick up a couple loose ends and then we'll just open it up for whatever discussion. Item B under number 5, ensuring accountability. This is an area that that we're trying to upgrade, and that one has the questionnaires that we sent out to the 100 people. That of all the things we've done, this has not happened the way we expected it to happen. It's not that the people didn't follow through and get involved in the ministry; it's that they didn't follow through on this last thing that we just looked over, and in these 7 areas, those goals. And so we are tightening that up now, where before we just said, get a peer and you show them your action plan, and then we want you to get with them in 3 months and sit down and tell this peer what you've done. And then 6 months we want, and so we want 3 quarterly evaluations done by your peer. Well, we're going to beef that up to where we have a brochure that explains to the peer what we're wanting them to do. Now, we're talking about our office sending out a letter both to the individual or couple and the peer or peers who are going to do the evaluation. And so we'll keep that in a tickler file where we can send that thing out and remind them that in the next couple weeks we expect them to do an evaluation. And we're talking about some phone calls in between, you know, during that quarter. So we're beefing that up, and all I would say is that when the dust settles, we'll have tighter, tougher accountability there, and people seem to want it. On the resources, the Willow Creek materials on networking, just call the number there at Fuller, the 1-800-C-Fuller, and just ask for a catalog if you don't happen to have one. And that also will show you the gift inventories that they carry if you have an interest in those. And then also in the spiritual planning segments of the Unleashing the Church seminars, there will be more being done on spiritual planning. Where we were giving 1 hour to it in the past, I had breakfast with Frank this morning, and we're talking about 2 hours in the subsequent Unleashing the Church. And we may need to get it to where we block out a day either at the front end or the tail end of the Unleashing seminar, where those who want to come in and walk away certified spiritual planners will be able to do that. So that's where we're headed long term. Let me just toss another overhead up here. I think when we think innovation, we don't want to go too far afield. This one here, our growth consultant thinks the term church sounds outdated, so they've called it the Elm Street Faith Boutique. Well, we want to do innovation, but we want to stay pretty much down the middle. We don't want to get off too far in any direction. So we're trying to keep our equilibrium and, you know, not do something too radical and out of line. I guess the other thing I would say is what we are into makes some pastoral staff very nervous. And maybe this overhead describes what they fear. This one from the far side, don't be alarmed, folks. He's completely harmless unless something startles him. So the lion's tail is sticking out of the door, and in just a moment we're going to see a giant reaction. But some pastoral staff fear that the door is going to close on a tail someplace, and it's going to just, there'll be repercussions all through the systems that are very, very negative. All I can say is that we've been doing this for 3 years, and it has been nothing but blessing and help. And we're very excited about doing it better and doing it more. So we do not feel threatened by these lay people, you know, getting all these answers. We just feel it's going to mobilize more people to get out there and get the job done. Let me just tell you 2 more stories and then I'm done. I spent only 2 sessions with Tony and Carol. And they come out of a very rough background and the drugs and just absolutely non-Christian environment. But non-Christians just gravitate to this couple. And so I just affirmed them. I said, listen, don't get back in the church building. You stay out there. I know you attend church. I know you're into a small discussion group. But you stay out there. Don't you come in here and change a whole bunch. What you're doing is great. And so a couple of weeks ago, I heard that right now there are 25 non-Christians just kind of hanging on to them. And so the spiritual planning, though, you know, it was just a couple of sessions, and it wasn't the whole process that we do with a lot of people. It just affirmed them that they were on track. Then I talked to the senior associate pastor of that campus. He's the preaching pastor of that campus. I said, here's what I found. Here's what I've said to them. Here's what I recommended. So he knows what's going on. The other staff guys up there, they know what's going on. But there's just a case where just a couple sessions really affirmed what they ought to be doing and how they ought to be doing it. I think I'll stop there, and then whatever you want to talk about, let's interact. And okay?
If we write you, can we get, without going to a seminar at this point, to be able to do the spiritual planning things that you've done? We have a questionnaire that you mentioned, and copies of the ministry gift list that you particularly have. Mm-hmm. Is the information available to us if we write you?
Okay. For the tape, I'll repeat all these questions. Excuse me for having to do that. If you write and want the materials that we are using right now, can you get them? And the answer is no, I'm sorry. Until we really get it together. And the reason we're just saying no is the word gets around, you can get this stuff, and we are just going to be inundated. And so we've just made a policy decision. You cannot get the stuff. If we do have a seminar after the first of the year, like the one we had in April and the one in May and the one in June, where you come in and spend 8 hours with us, at that time you could get copies of everything we've got at that point. But that's the way we're having to administratively handle it. I'm just being honest with you. Okay, thank you.
Thinking of the scene at large across America, there are up team number either the other churches that can't begin to put something like this together. Is there any provision being made to do like a clearing house for this kind of thing there?
Okay.
While you are servicing people in the Denver area, mm-hmm. what is projected in the future to
okay.
so that churches who couldn't begin with?
Okay, so the question is, there are many churches out there that could not begin to put this together themselves, and so could Bear Valley be a clearinghouse for all of this and make that available to them? Yes, as soon as we put this all together, and we are just a few months away in our judgment, then we're at a place where we would like to be able to come to your area or you come to us, and we put it in the hours and say, here's what we've learned, these are the guidelines, these are the materials, and here's how you do it. Go for it and praise God. So that's the direction we are headed. Yes?
In your situation, in the spiritual planning, how do you handle it in terms of how they get there to this spiritual planning?
Okay. The tape heard you.
Membership.
Right. We've had to not let people know about this, because we haven't had the firepower to handle it. And so one of my big goals coming online 7 months ago is to get together a team of lay people and any other pastoral staff who have the time to help us do it. And so right now, Gene Slade, who was down at Providence House, where I moved to Providence House, he also, before he gets out of seminary and becomes a chaplain, wants this. So this last week, he had his first spiritual planning sessions with a couple. And so we are not handpicking people at this point. We're letting them know that we need more workers to hit this. And if they have an interest, we have a monthly session from 6 to 9 p.m. and where all of those involved in spiritual planning, we get together. We talk about case histories, not by name. We just say, I met with a couple in their middle 30s, and I covered. We've gone through sessions 1 and 2, and these were the results. So we're learning from each other. But we've also got others dropping in who want to start to learn how to do this. The approach we are taking is the apprenticeship approach. And so Gene sat with me as I went through the whole process with Steve, that associate pastor. And because he's a seminarian, he's just sharp as can be. Just in watching it once, he's got it. And all I'm supplying him is the material and everything that he uses, so he just has to run on the track. And so we're using the apprenticeship approach. But we have to end the year with a dozen qualified spiritual planners to be on track. And then that next year, we probably need to pick up another 20 spiritual planners.
It is a requirement from now on to be in ministry thereby to go through this?
It is not required that people go through spiritual planning in order to be in ministry. They can go into any ministry, any time. And it's that thing, look, get them out the door doing it, mentality.
It might become
to where we will insist they go through this process before they are in certain ministries. And you see, we will be able, after the first of the year, to promote and say, you know, you people ought to get in spiritual planning. But I think the Lord has just spared us. I mean, it's been announced in some the biggest Sunday school classes that it's available. And I thank the Lord that these people didn't come in droves because we weren't ready for them. Yes?
Do you find that a lot of your time is spent finding out what needs there are in the ministries as well as informing the people?
Okay, are we also having to find out what the needs are in the ministries as well as finding out where the people are? Last week I had lunch with the man in charge of Shield of Faith, which is the ministry to people coming out of cults and out of aberrant Christian groups. And they've got experts now on Mormonism and experts on people coming out of these backgrounds, the occult and so forth. And so he and I are putting together a model of what we want all the other ministry teams to put together for us. And I held up this thing, the one-page description of these ministries. Well, what I'm asking Pat Knapp to put together for me is a second page with all of these specific jobs, how many hours, and get it down to the nitty-gritty, because when we computerize this, that's what we need to have. And so particularly in getting it set up, I'm going to have to spend a lot of time in the next 6 months being sure that I know what the very specific needs are in all these ministries and getting that on a computer. Yeah?
How many percent of church members that are actively involved in
ministry? What percentage of those at Bear Valley are actively involved in ministries? It is something like 75%. It is a guess, but it's something like that. How many people do we have? Total four campuses, 1,200. Yes?
Two questions. One is sort of a housekeeping question. How do you find out about these Unleashing Church seminars?
Okay, how do you find out about Unleashing Seminars? I can give you a phone number of the church. That might be the quickest way. That is area code 303-935-3597. The address I may as well give you as well if you wish to write. Just Bear Valley Church or Bear Valley Baptist Church is 2600 South Sheridan, Sheridan Boulevard, Denver, 80227. The zip 80227. And those are three times a year, and it's a limit of 50 people. And so the next one is in November. The last I heard, there were 15 openings left. The next one after that is in February. But they can just send you the brochure, which has all of the dates and all of the details on it.
My other question is, a person that you described, for example, who became a Christian, who was into music, and it was obvious that he needed to grow in some ways. In other words, when a person becomes a Christian, you don't take them to a spiritual planning thing the next day. How do you determine when they're ready for that? Mm-hmm. Maybe you said that, but I missed it.
Right. How do we determine when a new Christian is ready to be in spiritual planning? We haven't really planned that yet. We're so busy doing other things. I guess our first concern would be that they be in places where they can grow and develop and get things going. I guess the answer would be, if anybody who comes to us and wants spiritual planning, we will take them on. And we have had some who are really young Christians who have requested it. And we've had others who have been Christians for many years and request it. So it's pretty much on the basis of request. Not all of the people that are coming to us do we go through the full-blown four-session thing. I think of one couple, Jim and Judy, called, and they wanted to go through the process. I walked in the front door of their home, and within the first minute, I realized we had brand new Christians. And they really needed some help, and they needed to grow. And so we set up a small group that would meet in their home, and then others were invited. And I just said in the first session, I said, you know, you're not quite ready for the spiritual planning. I think there are other things that you need to work on before you go through this whole process. And Jim just said, well, fine, whatever you suggest. He wasn't disappointed or anything. It's just that he thought he might get some help by doing that. And just to have somebody come in who looked like they knew what they were doing, and he said, well, fine, whatever you suggest. So that's the way that went. Yeah.
You mentioned this fellow with the military and survival background, which brings to mind a couple of questions about people who, when you take through spiritual planning, you find out they've got a ton of ability, lots of possibilities, but there's nothing really, nowhere to really funnel them at this time, nowhere to really plug them in, which brings two questions to mind. First of all, have you ever plan somebody right out of your church into another program that does exist somewhere else where they do need people like that? Secondly, if no program exists, when do you determine it's time for a program to begin developing? What steps do you take?
Yeah, okay. I think the tape heard you. On the first question, have we ever programmed them right out of the church? Yeah, the first one that I ever sat down with Tim Robertson, where we went through it. We met with this guy, Tim, and we went through the whole thing. And when we got to the family issue on the action plan, his wife did not want to commute 30 minutes over to Bear Valley Church. And so they'd been visiting another church closer to them. And so both Tim and I said, well, we really agree with you. You shouldn't be going to Bear Valley Church. You ought to be going to Grace Chapel. And that's where you probably should go. And I think it's really a hardship on your wife where she is right now. And so we really think kingdom on that. And trust in the Lord, He's going to bring us some people from someplace else. So we don't flinch at all on that issue. On the second question, on what if you're going to start a new ministry? The way that works, and I'll just give you two examples, Sharon came in, phoned in, and then came in wanting to start a new ministry. Any lay person in the church can come to those of us on the staff and suggest a ministry that does not now exist. And so the way we do it, we sit down and interview that individual or that couple. And so with Sharon, she came in and she said, you know, my kids go to public schools. And she said, I would like to mobilize mothers who have children in public schools to pray and really focus prayer on these kids in public school. We cannot afford to have our kids go to a private school, to a Christian school. We're not in a position to do homeschooling. We need to go public school, but we'd really like to get the prayer. Okay. When somebody walks in like that, there are three criteria that they must meet in order to start the new ministry. One is that it will not cost any money. And that was not going to cost the general budget any money. All she needs is a place to meet or something. Secondly, is that there is enough leadership to run it. And so we don't give her the inquisition. We're trying to be helpful. We just say, well, who else might be interested in this? Well, I've already talked to Linda so-and-so, and Linda really wants to be in this with me. She doesn't want to lead it, and I'm willing to lead it. And I think there will be other mothers who will come alongside with us, but Linda and I for sure, and we're committed to this. So met that criteria. Third is that you stay out of any kind of moral or doctrinal problems. Okay, now the next step is she knows the guidelines. She's heard them a dozen times before anyway. So we announce then an organizational meeting for this mom's prayer group. And they're going to meet on a Friday night at 7 o'clock at a certain location. And so that's announced in the family focus, which is not directly in the bulletin. It's inserted in the bulletin. It was announced in Sunday school classes. Sharon made the rounds and said what it was. And so when the organizational meeting came, no staff person goes to that meeting because we'd want to take over the meeting. And so they are on their own, and if they need any help from us, we're there. And so that ministry has been going now for a number of months. So that's the way that launches.
My question, though, is I understand that, but my question, let's get back to, like, for instance, this fellow with the survival skills. Mm-hmm. He hasn't said to you, I want to start a survival, some ministry that will do that, but I've got that. What I'm saying is, when you see resources, but not... Mm-hmm. It seems to me, like, for instance, I can think of... I've got in my congregation some people who are very high on the skills level in terms of ministering to handicapped, mentally handicapped people, or people who are, one fellow has all the resources he needs for doing some sort of a convalescent transportation ministry. And the resources are in place, but no one has said, you know, I'd really like to begin. You know, there are people with these resources that don't have the vision or maybe the capability of launching a ministry. I'm saying when you see these resources available, no ministry in place, do you ever put out the word to say, let's start something?
Well, in my conversation with Bruce Bugbee, that was interesting, that we agreed that there are totally different ministry philosophies at Willow Creek and Bear Valley. You see, to answer your question, at Willow Creek, they would precipitate that and make it happen. At Bear Valley, we might drop a hint in the mind of someone, you know, has those capacities. Say, have you ever thought about this kind of ministry? We don't want to take it over or anything, but if somebody in your circle of friends in this church who are in this field has an interest in a ministry in that area, we would be supportive of it. That's the most that we would ever say.
Do you do some spiritual planning with them as to how they might become someone who could start a ministry?
If they request, whatever they request, but mostly we do not initiate it. The staff does not initiate it. Yeah.
The church I go to is called Staff of the Bible Church, Phoenix, Arizona.
Yes.
And the way we administrate that is if you have a burden for ministry, you have a responsibility for ministry. Don't lay it at our feet. And they don't have the vision, but they have the resources. We probably wouldn't do it because there's no heart to carry it through. We don't want to build a structure that we then have to race around trying to find people to prop up. If there's no vision, then it's not going to start. Second question, you mentioned that the church was comprised of 1,200 people and 75% are active in ministry. How do you define active?
That would be like they're teaching a Sunday school class, or they would be an assistant in a Sunday school class, or they would be working with Awana in some way, or it'd be any kind of ministry. Okay, we're at the end of our time, so let's just have prayer and we'll call it a day. Father, I just pray that you'll take what we've done here in these few minutes and multiply it for your glory. For we pray in Christ's name. Amen.